There's water issues. Again, there was no warm water, so I apologize. The intention was really to get a warm cup of coffee or tea. But we will break at 10:30 if you can hold on, and then we'll break for tea officially for a few minutes. I'm going to ask members to introduce themselves, and then I just want to ascertain from the lady at the back there, are you representing one of the organizations?
No, I'm
representing the PMG. Okay, all right, thank you. Okay, I'm going to ask members to introduce themselves, and then I'm going to ask the departments and the NGOs that are joining us to introduce yourselves. Thanks.
Good morning, my name is Ricardo McKenzie. I'm currently sitting in for my colleague. I'm an alternate member of the committee, member Wenge, she's on maternity leave. Thank you.
Kuyamora Amal, Dalen Mitchell.
Good morning, everybody. Reverend Dorothea Kopi, member of this committee.
Good morning, everybody. I'm member Marine Shaki, and I'm a member of this committee.
Good day, everyone. My name is Alma Fulmalse. I'm a regional manager for ACDD Cape Town.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. My name is Betty Nivert. I am from Child Welfare in Stellenbosch, and thank you very much for the invitation.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Nelly Kukumu, and I'm with Betty from Child Welfare, but in Eerste Rivier Kleinstad.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Bongani Dimandi. I'm from the Department of Home Affairs.
Good morning. My name is Bongwe Sakauli. I'm from Department of Home Affairs.
Good morning. My name is Musi Wangaka, the Department of Home Affairs.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Irmgard Michaels from the Department of Home Affairs.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Amanda. I'm the Western Cape Regional Manager for Black Sash.
Yep. Then the lady at the back, if you can introduce yourself for our record purposes, please. And you may take a seat at the mic. I'm going to ask you to do it again, just through the mic so that we can get it on record, please.
My name is Kay Groover. I represent the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thank you. If you can switch off after. Thank you. Our language practitioners at the back, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us. There are two more ladies joining us. Oh, there are a few people joining us. And the Department of Social Development.
Oh, you decided to bring them in. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Jarvis. Mr. Charles Jordan, if you can take a seat at the mic, possibly. And then I'd like, I want to ask all the guests to introduce themselves. Welcome, Mr. Season Saul. We're waiting on you, Mr. Jordan. And the department officials who joined you. Please do the introduction.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Charles Jordan. I'm the Chief Director of Social Welfare Department of Social Development, Western Cape.
Good morning. Lionel Arnold, Director of Community Development.
Okay. Mr. Lionel Arnold, don't you want to take a seat with the mic, please? As well as Mr. Caesar Souls and the other officials. Is it also DSD? All the ESDs. Yes, also a seat. Mm-hmm.
have three social workers from the department just observing.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning. Cesar Sols, Provincial Department of Social Development, Social Relief Program.
Thank you. Welcome, Member Lecker. Okay, this meeting was supposedly to be different than it is now. SASA was also invited to this meeting, so they have sent in an apology. They're not going to be attending. So we have now Home Affairs, and we have Black Sash, and Black Sash is going to do an update on the last briefing that they did when SASA was here. And then RCFIA and Child Welfare are here with regards to your presentation pitch the last time with the challenges that you have in obtaining the registration for children in your care. And Home Affairs is here, so they will be able to answer on those challenges that you have. So I want to say to the Department of Home Affairs, thank you very much for availing yourselves to join this committee today, as well as Black Sash. And then members, just after the stakeholders has left, we will then talk around what the next step would be with regards to inviting SASA again after this. So we won't talk to that now. We'll talk to that when we do our administrative task. And then I just need to say, Member Makaleni has sent in an apology, so she is not joining us. She is at Wits for the week. And as we know, I want to bestow a welcome to Member McKenzie, who's going to be with us for the next few months with regards to Member Wenger being on leave for the time being.
Member. Chairperson, just a point of clarity. The issue that we've got the Department of Social Development here, and I'm very glad that we've got a social relief program represented here. Will we be able as members to ask them questions on issues relating to SASA?
Sure, Mr. Solf, I'm now speaking out of your mouth, and I'm saying sure that you will answer the questions that we have pertaining to social relief. Or is it Mr.?
Yeah, there's two of us that will speak to that specifically, so I'm covered. Yeah.
Okay, so Member Gillian, they will. Member McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I just wanted to find out, you said SASA gave an apology. Will we discuss it afterwards, or do they give any indication as to why they're not here this morning?
I said that we will discuss it when we do our administrative task after the department and the two departments, the NGOs, has left. So we will discuss it then on the way forward. Okay. All right. So I'm going to give over to Home Affairs. You have... I'm going to give over to Black Sash to do your presentation. Members, can I just have direction here? We're going to take Black Sash, and then are we posing the questions immediately after the presentation, or can you hold out until after Home Affairs, RCFIA, and Child Welfare? I'm taking guidance.
Chairperson, why don't we just do Home Affairs and the NGOs first? Because the issue pertaining to Black Sheath has got in relation with SASA. And I think let's do Home Affairs, finish Home Affairs and the NGOs, then move over to the Black Sheath and the Department of Social Development, because those are the two that are interlinked.
Okay, members, there is a proposal. Are we going with it? Now, I'm asking Black Sash, because you were now on the program, to go with your presentation first. Is it okay if we put you on the back burner and we go over to Home Affairs and then to the NGOs? Thank you. Thank you for your indulgence. Home Affairs, it's over to you. Thank you, Mr. Ndaka. Members, you have received the presentation. Before Ms. Ngaka goes, I just want to ascertain now from RCFFA and it's supposed to be Valley Development Project, isn't it? Are they not present?
No.
Okay. But do you have a presentation or just you just have your questions ready for Home Affairs?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
thank you very much. Thank you very much, colleagues. My name is Musiwa Ngaka, like I have indicated earlier. With me, maybe I must give a background that I'm with my colleagues, which will reflect on our management team slide that is represented by our provincial manager who's currently on leave. What is it? Who's currently on leave, and then we also have our provincial coordinators who are currently on leave as well, Ms. Van den Berg as well as Ms. Ndlovu. Our provincial manager, Mr. Simons, is also on leave, and then our IMS coordinator could also not attend and finance director. Now with me, I'm actually with our district managers, for the different districts, Cape Metro as well as Overberg, Ms. Sagauli as well as Cape Winelands and West Coast, Ms. Michaels. But we also have one of our office managers, Mr. Bongani Ndimande. Thank you very much. Then I can continue having given that introduction. Our presentation, we try to give a geographical view of our locatedness, which I think everybody should be familiar with. Then from there, given the geographical locatedness and situatedness, we try to say we are going to give you an outline of our footprint in terms of the different districts. Like when you look at that slide, we have Cape Metro and Overberg Club together under Ms. Sagauli with the large office Cape Town and Khayelitsha, and then from there medium offices, Belleville, Winebeck, Mitchell's Plain, Nyanga, as well as Caledon. And then from there we also have small offices, Rabo, Riddlesdorp, as well as Swellendam. Then under Cape Winelands and West Coast, under Ms. Michaels, we have large office in Paarl, and then we have medium offices located in Stellenbosch, Augusta, Somerset West, Malmesbury, and Fredendal. And then small offices, Cyrus, Robertson, Fredendal, Citrusdal, and Atlantis. And then Eden District, we, Fredenberg, sorry. Eden District and Central Karoo under myself. Large office is located in George, and then we have medium offices in Oudtshoorn, Beaufort West, as well as Mossel Bay. Our small offices are located in Plettenberg Bay, Lionsberg, as well as Prince Albert. Then that is the high-level summary of our footprint. That is indicative of the 28 offices within our 5 districts, as I have just mentioned in the previous slide. And we have 22 modernized of such offices. By modernization, what are we referring to? We are referring to the offices that are now issuing smart ID cards. And we, in that jurisdiction, we no longer issue barcoded IDs. We only issue smart ID cards. This differentiates the offices between those that are modernized and the ones that we refer to as legacy offices. Those that we still have not modernized because they are still to be prioritized. And then we have also, service points. where we don't have the actual office. For example, when you look at areas like Ladysmith, we have a contact point there. By contact point, what we mean, we move in, it's either we are given a small anyana space on a temporary basis, or else we move in through our mobiles. And normally it will serve as our contact point in the form of a legacy, where we'll still be issuing those green barcoded IDs, because we don't have mobile solution yet, modernization solution yet. And then, we have about 79% of our offices that are modernized at this stage. So it means that most of our offices are ultimately going to be modernized if at this stage we have areas such as Prince Albert that is also modernized, small as it is. So we are issuing only ID smart card in Prince Albert, just to say about few. We also have, I think, also areas such as Ceres that are offering that. And then we have 27 connected health facilities. You'll recall that in terms of the Birth Registration Act, we are bound to register our children or our babies within 30 days, after which it becomes another process referred to as late birth registration of birth. I think I'll come to that slide later on. And then Stellenbosch and Grabo is earmarked for modernization in 2018-2019, rollover from 2017. It was actually supposed to have been done last year, these two offices, but because of certain constraints that were beyond our control, we carried that over to this financial year. And then we have 11 mobile offices. These mobile offices is actually the tax. You will see them that are written Home Affairs, but they are soon to be phased out, because we are also, as a department, on the brink of rolling out a mobile solution, modernized mobile solution, whereby we will be able to just get into an area having our suitcase or that small anyana truck or a bike or a car that will be used to issue the ID smart card. Just trying to also cover the most rural areas of the rurals, and with the cost-effective way possible of not necessarily having to have a standing building. It means that it will be supply on demand. And then we have one bank in Canal Walk that is also, when we modernized our offices, so we were saying we want to have a footprint all over, just to make sure that we bring the services to the people as much as possible, as a result of which we have a memorandum of understanding, an agreement with the banks. But this has been rolled out as a pilot in some few areas. For example, in Cape Town, we only have one such bank, in Canal Walk, Standard Bank, that is also issuing ID smart cards. And then out of the 23 local municipalities within the Western Cape, only one is without DHA facilities, which is Brede-Fale. That is the only district so far. So I think it will also come. It's just a matter of constraints here and there, trying to overcome them and making sure that at the end of the day, the whole population is covered. And then our provincial office is sharing space with Cape Town office. The reason being that we are trying to be as cost effective as possible. In the past, the provincial offices would be there, and then the offices would be there. Now, nowadays, it doesn't work that way. We have to try and save cost as possible. And then we have also tried to establish, because, you know, with the legacy part of the services, we had a lot of paperwork. So that paperwork had to be in the form of the files, the forms and so on that had been used initially. So they had to be archived and filed elsewhere. So for that reason, we have actually resolved as Provincial Department of Home Affairs to establish such a facility in Belleville office, where each and every office in the province is having its own small space to archive, so that we ensure that our records are ready as and when they are needed. And then from there, let us get to the next one. The next slide is about birth registration and identity legislative framework that governs birth registration strictly. We have those acts that govern birth registration, Birth and Death Registration Act of 1992, Act number 51 of 1992 as amended, and then regulations on the registration of birth and death, 2014 and then Children's Act 2005, Act Number 38 of 2005, and then Identification Act 1997, Act Number 68 of 1997 as amended. Immigration Act of 2002, Act Number 13 of 2002 as amended, as well as Refugee Act of 1998, Number 130 of 1998. Okay, there are certain stipulations that are attached to birth registration, and these are the following. Birth registration is the first point. You'll remember that our mandate is to secure the identity of the people, you know, and to ensure free flow of migration of both or of the foreign nationals in and out of the country within the stipulated framework. Now, there is also this aspect in the center, the issue of citizenship. Now, in order for one to acquire that citizenship, the first entry into citizenship domain is through birth registration. That is why the first point there is indicating that birth registration is the first point of entry into the National Population Register with the allocation of a 13-digit unique identity number. And then number two, by law, a child must be registered within 30 days from the date of birth, Section 9 of the Act. And then any birth registered after 30 days is known as late registration of birth, abbreviated to LRB. And then a child must always be present when the birth is registered. The reason for this, in the past there would be this thing that a person can register a person who is not there, only to realize that the actual child that is registered is not the child that is supposed to be registered. As a result, there were fraudulent activities that were taking place around that, and a resolution was taken that when the child is registered, the child must be there. That is why there was this all out of health facilities to say, after the mother has delivered the baby, we have our official who will immediately go and register the baby who he sees or she sees on the spot. And then the department is also on the verge of biometric enrollment of children to ensure identity, to secure identity, just to make sure that this child, so that we can link this child again from birth, we can be in a position to link this child at the age of 60 when the child comes and applies for the ID. Then we are able to say this is the very same child who was born on this particular year. As per our biometric, we are on the verge of that. It has not yet been rolled out. And then if the child has to be registered, for example, we have to obtain consent from parent to register, but if the informant is other than the parent, they should be written, because if we don't do that, we often get what we refer to as false registration, where somebody else will register this baby who's not hers. And later on, the mother comes and says, no, I'm coming to register this very same child. Then we get a situation where there is a duplication, and the department ultimately gets to be blamed for that. And then citizens 16 years and above who qualify may apply for a South African identity document. Who qualify? And then recognized refugees in terms of Section 24 can also apply for refugee identity document. And I'm going to the next slide. We have said that in terms of Birth Registration Act Section 9, babies are supposed to be registered within 30 days of birth, after which another process takes over, which is late registration of birth. This slide exactly speaks to that. Birth registration requirements, children from South African citizens and age categories. These are the different categories of the birth registration. From 0 to 30, these are the requirements. Most of the requirements are the same. It will be parent identity document, marriage certificate if applicable, and then a proof of birth registration, proof of birth registration from hospital. That form is referred to as DHA-24. Abbreviated proof of death. And then from there, from age 31 days for 1 year. That is yet another category of the birth registration. And it is no longer the normal one in terms of the Act. It means that the parents' documents are still needed. Proof of birth registration is still needed. But this needs to be verified by the office manager whether this child is really a South African before it can be registered. There are certain questions attached. Other than when the baby is registered at the age of 30, where we just register the baby without any question. But beyond that, there are certain questions that have to be asked. And then from the age 1 year to 7 years, the parent identity document, marriage certificate, is still needed. But in addition to that, we also need supporting documents such as proof of birth from hospital again, and then maternity certificate, as well as the letter from the school, you know, to prove that this person, because if we speak about a person who's 7 years, it means that we speak about the person who has already started attending the school and so on. Now, in this letter of the school, it's not just a letter just that is written. It should be a printout from the school admission register with a unique admission number that was attached to the child and the date of admission of the child. Because we need to link those, to check the authenticity. And then from there, supporting documents must be verified prior to adjudication. This one, like I said, that is a different thing. Now, there is a committee that sits where interviews are going to be held. And normally we prefer that the person that comes with this kind of a case, it should be the person that knows the child from birth. To say, this child was born here, I know this, and probably should be the parent. If the parent is not there, it should be the person that knows this person, not the person, I'll come to that category. So this adjudication committee is actually chaired by the district manager. As we are seated here, the three district managers will be chairing over those committees in the different districts. And the turnaround thereof, often we get queries because it takes time. That is why we normally encourage that. Register your baby within 30 days, then you don't have challenges later in life. But immediately it becomes a late registration of birth. There are a lot of questions that we ask because we have to verify the citizenship, whether this child is truly a South African. And that is why we go through a stringent kind of an interview. And after that interview, it does not end there. We still have to send all those documents to head office for further verification. That is why the turnaround time thereof is about 6 months, which is equals to 180 days. Unlike if the child was registered within 30 days, you get the certificate there and then, you know, on the spot. And then we go to the last category. The last category is that one of 7 years and above, because in the late registration of death, you even get people at my age who do not have death certificates. Yeah, who will come at the age of 59 and say, no, now I want to, at the age of 60 or 65 to say, no, I've never had a birth certificate. Those are some of very difficult cases and for which we are often taken to task. It's like, sometimes we are even being pushed, unfortunately we don't bow down because we have to do things according to the Act, and the procedure and the process. We bear with this person that he doesn't have this document, but also we also have to verify our things. That is why when I come to this slide, we always encourage the Department of Home Affairs that please, when the baby is born, it's free of charge to register the baby. Register that baby within 30 days. You are not going to go through these problems. Now this one, it also speaks to the same parent's identity document, marriage certificates where applicable. Two photographs of the child. You see, now it changes even the form, because now the photos of the child are needed in these categories. And then the fingerprints of the child to be taken, supporting documents such as birth, proof of birth from hospital, maternity certificate, letter from the school, supporting documents must be verified prior to adjudication. This is adjudicated by the provincial manager. And you see that this is the category that takes most of the time, because we have only one provincial manager who has to go to Cape Winelands, who has to go to Overdeck, who has to go to Cape Metro. Now, it takes time. When he's in this district, we have to wait our turn in that other district. And normally those are the cases that are very urgent, where people will be wanting to push us and push us and push us. We don't keep it back because we don't want to. They are adjudicated by only one person, unless a policy letter has been given. Let me go to the next one. The next one, birth registration, children born from South African citizens and foreign nationals. In addition to the above categories that I just alluded to, the following requirements will apply for children born from South African citizens and foreign nationals. Foreign nationals must have valid passport and visa or permit, which must be verified by the immigration section in terms of the Immigration Act, Act number 13 of 2002 as amended. paternity test results not older than 3 months must be obtained from the approved National Health Laboratory Service paternity testing laboratories. This paternity test, it is done at the cost of the client, not at the cost of the department. The next one, birth registration requirements. This is also another category, abandoned or orphaned children. In terms of the regulation informing the registration of birth and death, Act number 20, of 2014, section 9.1. Notice of birth of an abandoned or orphaned child must be given by a social worker within 60 days of obtaining court order in terms of section 156 of Children's Act 2005, Act number 38 of 2005, and must be accompanied by the following. Cognizance must be taken of the fact that we have referred to the court order, which often becomes a challenge when we have to deal with certain cases. Because why the court order is needed, the child might be referred to as an abandoned child or an orphan child, and then he is registered by Home Affairs using this particular informant, only to realize that after a certain period, the actual parent of the child appears. And then when he appears, he demands, or she demands the right, who gave you permission to register this child on the name of this person? Now, as Home Affairs, we are in a better position to say, can you please go and ask the court? Because the court has ordered us to register this child. Yeah. And then it needs the following, a court order issued by the children's court, a copy, certified copy of identity document or valid passport, and visa or permit of the social worker. Where available, a certified copy of the identity document of the passport and visa or permit of the parent of the child. Where available, a certified copy of death certificate of the parent of the child and a social worker report that was presented to the children's court. Okay? I think I'm almost finished. Birth registration designated offices for adjudication of late registration. Late birth of registration. We have 11 dedicated offices to that. They are listed. I won't mention them one by one again. I have alluded to them in the previous slides. But I must also indicate that because of the poor, the needy nature of our communities, what we do, for example, in some of the instances, we even go to the communities whose areas are not listed here. Why? Because we want to reach out. I'll give a typical example, and I know my colleagues also have some other examples. For example, if you look at area like Lionsburg does not appear here. And Lionsburg is one of the poverty-stricken areas. We do drive there and do our registration. For example, there is an area called Marysburg. We do go as and when there is a demand, but there is an area called Marysburg between Beaufort West and that area we did go and do some late registration of death, because at one point there was this client who was claiming that the transport that he has to pay from Marysburg to Beaufort West It's about 1,000 rand. So what I was trying to highlight was the fact that we do go to areas even where they are not designated here because we want to help our people. And then identity document requirements. First time issue and birth certificate of the child's identity book or ID smart card of the parent, informant or guardian. Child must be accompanied by a parent, proof of residence or provide residential address. No payment required for the 16-year-old, the first-timer applicant. And then the first-time issuance when both parents are deceased. Birth certificate of the child, the second one, death certificate of the late parent. Child must be accompanied by the informant or the guardian. The guardian must be in possession of a legal document or court order, foster care order. No affidavit, and then the guardian must be in a possession of a legal document. Okay, I'm repeating that, sorry. And then the next one is online. The next one is online verification report of the informant that must be attached with supporting documents. And then proof of residence or provide residential address and no payment required. And then the identity document requirements for 6-year-olds. Green barcoded identity document, the old one, in case of green barcoded ID. If affidavit in case the green barcoded ID or the green identity document is lost. And then proof of residence or provide residential address. And then marriage certificate if married. And then divorce decree if divorced. And then proof of residence. And then no payment is required as well. With this smart ID card, the elderly from 62, we give them free of charge everything. And then other citizens, green barcoded ID, identity document, affidavit in the case of identity document is lost, proof of residence and address, and then marriage certificate if married, and then divorce decree if divorced, and then a fee of 140 rand will be required. And thank you very much. This is the end of my presentation. Can I have this?
Thank you very much for that detailed presentation. I'm going to give to members to pose questions, and then I will come to the NGOs. In the meantime, I just want to ascertain Valley Development Project are here. Member McKenzie, Member Gillian, Member Mitchell, and Lekker. Go please.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me echo.
Sorry, Member McKenzie. I just. I'm going to take a round of questions, and then if Home Affairs then can respond to that, Mr. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, let me echo what you said. Thank you for the Department of Home Affairs for bringing such a strong team here this morning, and hopefully everybody will be able to answer our questions. So thank you very much for that. I really appreciate it from my perspective. The first question I'm going to ask is related to your presentation, particularly to first-time registrations. Last week, Monday, was school holiday still. I took my 16-year-old daughter to Home Affairs in Wynberg, and we started at 5:45. We left at 11 o'clock. It was very laborious process, and I'm keen to know what your future plan is to deal with this challenge, because by the time we got there, they already queue of what 30-40 people in front of us, so that they must have got there by 5. So I just want to find out what is the plan to deal with some of these challenges, particularly at Home Affairs in Wynberg, and this happened last week Monday. And secondly, with regards to the smart card ID at Standard Bank in Century City, when do you think or how do you think the process will unfold to open that up to other branches as well, if there is such a process in the foreseeable future, and are you thinking of working with other banks as well? My last question related to the birth registration, particularly for foreign nationals, because my constituency is Mitchell's Plain, and I gather complaints all the time from people. Unregistered individuals or undocumented individuals who do have children, what is the plan or process to deal with those individuals, and also individuals, unregistered individuals that have children with South African women. How do you deal with those challenges? And when it comes to first-time registration for undocumented individuals and their children, because some of these kids are in schools, and I'm particularly talking about Tarsus High School and Oval North, practical experiences that I had to try and intervene, how do you register first-time registrations of undocumented individuals with kids, particularly kids that are already in school? So, I'm just, yes, Inathema Kavache, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, please. First-time registration for 16-year-olds and children that are 7 years old. I'm talking about Cascade Primary, particularly. There were a couple of cases in Tafelsig of High School of 16-year-olds of parents who are undocumented individuals. Thank you.
Thank you. Member Gillian.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 3, I need to rectify the department. At your last bullet, out of the 23 local municipalities within the Western Cape, there's only one without a DHA facility. It's wrong. You don't have a facility in Overstrand in Overberg. So it can't only be one in Breede Valley. I think your document is wrong, and in practice, there is no office in Overstrand. If you can look into that. Then on page 5, with the birth registration requirements, if you are saying, and we all know this as a fact, you've got a period of 0 to 30 days to register a child, what are you doing with the offenders? Because the issue is, if people don't register their child, it becomes a societal problem. And we are sitting and facing with that problem on a daily basis. Then when we talk about people, and you made a reference to this, people that are 60 years old and older that don't have an ID, that is one of our most serious problems that we are faced with within society, because the requirements from the department, and I understand that there must be rules and requirements, but when I'm sitting with a lady of 65 years old coming into my office, she don't have a school that she can go through. All these issues that the department is asking us to give as a reference to issue that ID, mostly we are going into a thick wall, because there is nobody who can assist. What do we do in a case like this? Then the issue of the issue of children that is in foster care. And all of us know how long it takes to place a child into foster care. What do we do in a case where the placement has not been approved, or there's no court order? What do we do with that registration of the child if you don't have the court order? The child is in foster care. How do we register that child? Thank you.
Thank you. Member Mitchell?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, firstly, let me welcome the presentation, and also thank you very much for heeding the call. So I'm not going to go back to Maritzburg, because that's my constituency, and I made a note of that. Maritzburg were mentioned, so I was covered. because it is, in fact, a big concern for the residents of Maritzburg to get to Beaufort West with the distance. So based on that, Jay, I understand that the department alluded to the fact that if there's a need, they go out, and when there's an outcry. But is there not a set kind of program that for rural towns and that the services are brought to the people on a regular basis. I mean, Beaufort West has got a local office, and about a month ago, in my engagements with the community, I found a child that's turning 1 year old, or the 1 year old child that hasn't been registered. So I want to latch on to what Member Gillian was saying. So the bottom line is, if the child's not registered, the poverty, growing up in a home with poverty, that child is not even able to get a grant, and so it's a big societal problem, as previously mentioned. So I think the bewustmaking needs to happen more, the advocacy, yes. So is there a program, and if so, could we have that for those programs? Because I personally would like to join one of these programs to see what exactly is being communicated to our communities, because we take for granted that people actually know these things, and many of the time it's not because they don't understand it, but it's because nobody has told them, and I feel very strongly about that. Thank you.
Just switch on your mic.
Yeah, I just want to verify whether the question is related to the LRB cases.
No, it's related to that.
Okay.
But it's
in terms of how we roll out our awareness. Okay.
Yes, without getting into a dialogue, Chief, with your permission, I also think that it's a matter of, even for those first time registrations, so it's not only linked to late registration.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
general
advocacy and bewustmaking in general.
Mm-hmm. I had a question. How do you communicate this to communities? What do you do? So it's latched on to what Member Mitchell has just asked. Member Lecker?
No, thank you, Chair. My apologies for arriving late. First, I want to ask a question. I can see the topic is on birth registration and ID document processes. And I want to check, Chair, in an event where an individual has passed on and a parent of that person is also late, and the individual that has died has no ID document, and in order for that person to be registered as a deceased person, I have cases where families were asked to bring an identity document. So what do you do in that instance? Because for a lack of a better word, on two occasions we asked the undertakers to intervene in that matter, and we could not get a specific answer mm-hmm. from the officials at Nyanga Home Affairs on how to deal with this. So I would like to understand exactly what is the process, the correct process to follow. The second one, Chair, relates to the presentation itself on the late registration of birth. In an event where a parent born in 1978 somewhere in the farms in the Eastern Cape went to a farm school and that farm school no longer exists, that same parent has got six daughters of her own. Only one daughter has a birth certificate because she went to an uncle who then registered as a child of his. So that's the only person who's got an identity document. There's a couple of grandchildren. What do you do in such instances? Because it's not only affecting, as other people have said, the family, becomes a societal issue because none of those people has got an income, and at least one would assume that with the child grant, at least there could be some means of ensuring that there's food on the table. So what do you do in such instances? They are predominantly in the informal settlement. You find many of those cases even in the metro. The last one, Chair, relates to the registration of children born to foreign nationals. And I want to check, Chairperson, many a times you get parents who give birth to those children who, by the way, their mothers are South Africans, and the mother died, and the father does not know what to do next. They don't want to take those children as their own. They want to leave those children with the grandparents. So what do you do in such cases? I'll pause for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Member Gopi.
Chair, most questions have been asked, but I just want to maybe add is that here there's on page 3 there's 22 modernized offices, and out of 28, which is 6 is not modernized, and how long will these 6 take to be modernized? And secondly, the Standard Bank that is doing smart IDs, how do they go about appointing that specific bank? And then the question of when are the other banks going to be rolled out is already been asked. And then the Leven Mobile, where is this Leven Mobile being used? And why can't one of the 11 mobiles be a regular mobile to Maritzburg, Nelspruit, these places that is in dire need, instead of going to Maritzburg only when there's a need or whatever, but the people knows that on a Wednesday or second Wednesday every month there will be a mobile coming here. So my question is around 11 mobile. And I think my last one is also, and when this test was done on this bank of Canal Walk, in other places like Maritzburg and all those, the East Banks, why is it whatever? But why? But why is that not also being done as a try in those places that that doesn't have a office? Thank you.
If you just allow me this thing on the Standard Bank, because I'm very interested to know how does it work. How do we advise communities to go into the Standard Bank in Canal Walk? Is it operating like a fully fledged office? And then also to latch on Member Gopi's question, if this is a pilot in Canal Walk, and Canal Walk is a la-di-da, it's for the rich and famous. Is the department looking into rolling out into Standard Bank into areas where you don't have police offices? And I'm specifically referring to Hermanus and Breda Valley, because if you look into Oversand, it's a very big area with big towns, with, and also in Breda Valley, that is also the Worcester area where we will get the Standard Banks. Do you think because you don't have fully fledged offices there, you can also roll it out into those two areas? Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to add on, why Standard Bank? Mm-hmm. How did Home Affairs get to Standard Bank versus Capitec Bank, or versus ShopRite that is accessible to our needy communities? Why Standard Bank can now walk of all places? And I agree with Member Gillian, it's not the average poor person that goes to Canal Walk, and it costs you money to get to Canal Walk. So
if you can explain. And then I want to know, Malmesbury Home Affairs is no longer a modernized office. So those residents who access the Malmesbury office, where do they go now? How was it communicated to those communities that no longer you will access a smart card? And then also, and you latched onto and you use the Murraysburg example. It cost our communities lots of money to get to Home Affairs.
Mm.
It's a reality.
Mm.
If I think of people that need to get from Citrusdal to Vredendal, it cost them over R1,000, which they do not have. So how, what is your plan of action in terms of working smarter and more accessible to those communities that need you more? Then I want to know, in terms of those late registration, are there any plans of you working with Department of Social Development to get the service to perhaps the ECD centers to register children there who are not registered? And the mobiles that you say is going to be phased out, by when is it going to be phased out? And also, again, I want to reiterate, how does Home Affairs really communicate to communities of the service and where they can access the service, and how often do you communicate this? And then the Tusong Centres was supposed to be, or is supposed to be, a hub where community can access service delivery. Are you using the Tusong Centres? And how often and where do you use it? And if you are not using it, why not? What is the challenges pertaining to not using the Tusong Centres? I'm going to then still give Member Mitchell an opportunity and Member McKenzie, and then I'm going to come back to a Valley Development Project and to child welfare. And after these two members, the round that you have had, and I know it has been lots, if you can respond to that, please.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to refer to page 11, or slide 11, under abandoned or orphaned children. So I just want to know, how's the Department of Home Affairs working with Social Development, Health, Department of Justice to acquire, to get the information, or to acquire the information of abandoned or orphaned children? That's the first one. And then, Chair, I want to go to slide 11, 12, with regards to the dedicated 11 offices for late registration. Now, again, I'm here to represent my constituency, so please bear with me. But if you look at the 11 identified offices, you have Beaufort West, and then you have in Worcester. Now, if you look at a community like Lanesburg, it's 290-odd kilometers to get to Worcester, and the same to get to Beaufort West. So what do you have any plans to expand those offices, because for the community of Lanesburg, it's actually they actually don't have a choice. It's either Worcester, Beaufort, or Uriberg, Oudtshoorntoe. But the point is, it costs our community lots and lots of money. And I mean, late registration, rightly or wrongly, on the parent, the reality is we as government have an obligation to provide the service to our community. So, are there any further plans to expand those offices? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just the last question. On the mobile units, if you can perhaps just share with us, how do we get the mobile units to our constituencies? Similar concerns raised by everybody. The Home Affairs office is in Central Mitchells Plain, but if you come from Tafelsig or Horton, 99 Monwabisi, it takes you two taxis to get to Home Affairs. And 30 rand for an unemployed person, I can tell you, is like a million rand for all of us. I mean, it's a lot of money. Whether you come from the farm, it's another taxi, or takes you, if you are brave enough to walk, it's a serious risk to your life. So how do we get the process? You just guide us to get these mobile units to our constituencies, and how do you go about advertising it? Because it's nice to have a mobile office, but if nobody knows about it, it doesn't really help anyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's the round.
The first question talked to Weinberg about the long queues and how do we try to alleviate that. I want to indicate that at the moment on our agenda, top on our agenda, is war on queues. On Friday, I was we even have the steering committee on war on queues. We report every 2 weeks to that steering committee that is chaired by the DG. Now, what is happening with this war on queues? It places the office manager at the center of all the activities, where it's not a matter of choice, but the manager must communicate to the clients outside on the queues. Hence, we even have the reporting templates in terms of how many people do we have before we open. We report that at about 8 o'clock, we report that at about 10 o'clock, we report that at about 12 o'clock, we report that at about 3:30. But in addition to that, the manager is there to serve as a floor walker. For example, if you look at Metro itself, we even have a voice clip with one of the radio stations at the moment, where periodically on certain periods, I think our district manager from Metro will explain it if further clarification is needed in that regard. But in that voice clip, what we do, we give an explanation in terms of the influx of the clients in each and every office around Metro, just to make sure that the clients are aware that at this office at this time, we are full. Can you please move to a particular office with a less number of people where maybe you can conveniently be helped as soon as possible? But we cannot rule out the fact that there will always be queues because we are intensive client service. So this is what we are doing. But from time to time also, you'll see that what we are also doing, we try to empower. We are piloting at this stage. It has been piloted already in Cape Town. The principle of empowerment of our clients so that they understand how we work. We have a card that we use. We call it a flyer. This flyer in front of it, it has the requirements of all our services. But at the same time, each and every client, whilst on queue, each and every client is required to complete his particulars or her particulars, the address, the ID, and so on. So that when he gets inside, already the person who's going to help this person just takes us that flyer and then just hides. And then it minimizes, you know, our waiting time. But besides that, after that, on the queue itself, the clients are divided in such a way that we divide them in terms of different services that they go to. As they go inside, they know exactly that they go here. It's not like a confusion where a person is going to ask himself, where do I go from here? But besides that, you see that we have the modernized services, we have non-modernized services in our offices. Now, when you look at modernized services, I'm talking specifically to the ID smart card. Yeah? These people will come and queue, and then we divide them into two. We divide them into applications and those that are coming to collect only. And then besides that, we also divide this queue into yet another category of non-modernized. The non-modernized is the legacy services that I referred to earlier, like your birth certificates, they are not yet digitized. So these people, when they come in, it depends on the structure of the specific office. These people, from the beginning when they come, because of having been categorized from outside, what we do, we send them straight to the birth, death, and marriage section, where they're going to be assisted. And in that sense, it alleviates the queues. But at the same time, when queues are so much unbearable, the office manager is also required to talk to the clients and inform them that, because we also work according to the capacity of the office. If these people are, let's say we have about 200 people outside and the office can only carry 60 people, it tells you that at a particular point in time, there are certain people that are not going to be assisted. But it's better that you inform these people while, you know, on time, so that they don't come and queue for, let's say, 4 hours and then only to be told that we are not going to be able to assist you. Besides that, we also, in terms of measuring our queues, we have introduced the stickers. They're just about to be rolled out in the Cape Metro, especially in Cape Town. It's different colors. The first color will be a white color. That will be given to the client in the queue before the office opens. And then from there, 2 hours later, as per our reporting times, what is going to happen, another color is going to be provided to that client. Then we know that we can differentiate to say these people who are here now, they have been here for 2 hours, these ones have been here, and then in that way, the office manager is then able to can actually prioritize the queues and make sure that at least that lines are assisted. I believe that, Chair, maybe my colleagues would like to add to that.
Thank you, Colin. My name is Bongwe Sagaula. I'm the district manager for Cape Metro. I just want to add on what Mr. Ngaka has said. For Wynberg, let me be direct. For Wynberg, for example, what we are doing in Cape Metro, including Wynberg, the office is supposed to open at 8 o'clock for public, but we open our offices from 6:30. What we are doing, we start with collections. We issue them with the tickets. We've got certain individuals, like some managers and some officials, who are willing to work without being paid. So we issue them with the tickets so that when the officials start at 8, they just start with issuing the IDs. That's the first thing that we are doing. The second thing, with the sticker, with the cards that Mr. Ngaka was talking about, in those cards, if, for example, in the office you see that you've got 300 people or 400 people who are queuing for applications for ID and passports, and you look at the capacity of the office, you see that you can only assist 250. So those cards have got numbers up to 250. You issue them with those cards. It's just that you forgot to bring that card. At the front of the card is the information, the qualifying requirements. At the back is the client's details. So when you issue the clients with those cards, you tell them that today we can only assist 250. Therefore, I'm going to issue 250 people with these cards. So if you are number 251, we might not be able to assist you, but we don't just send them back. What we do, we've got the WhatsApp group that you communicate with. Oh, I'm sorry. So what we do, we check, because we've got, I'm not sure if you want to listen to the voice clip that is on the radio at 8 o'clock and 12 o'clock. Do you want to listen to that one? Was that not it? Okay.
This report is brought to you by the Department of Police. All offices in the Cape Metro and Winelands are fully functional. Client volumes are high at Nyanga office and moderate at Cape Town, Somerset West, Bellville and Paul offices. Clients are advised to go to Khayelitsha, Mitchell's Plain or Wynberg offices where client volumes are low. Please note, Online applications for ID smart cards and South African passports can be applied and paid for through the e-Home Affairs platform at www.dha.gov.za. For any inquiries, please contact the Home Affairs Contact Center at 0800 60 11 90. Remember, it is your civil responsibility to register your newborn baby within 30 days of birth. We care.
Thank you.
Can I just ask clarity around that clip? Where is that clip played, you say, and when is it played?
It's on Cape Talk. Yeah, 8 o'clock and 12 o'clock in the morning.
Every day. So why not any community radio station?
No, we are busy with that one. Office managers are supposed to engage the local radio station. And CCIS is also helping us with that one.
Can I just ask if you are going to, are you working towards the three languages,
Yes, that's what we are also. And then what we do then, the office manager will have to talk to the office manager of the another office to check how many additional people they can take for that day. So what we do in those slips, we issue the client with those slips, we sign that slip. The moment you sign the slip, it means that office has to assist those people, because you can't refer a person to an office and then when the person gets there, he's told that we cannot assist you. So if you sign it, then they are committed, they have to assist those ones. That's the best one. And those cards also with numbers, if you are number 200, we always say some people come to our offices and they've got another appointment somewhere else. Maybe they have to go to the doctor. You can go to the doctor and come back. If those, we issue them on daily basis. If you come back, it confirms that you are here. So whether we've cut the queues or not, we have to assist you because this shows that you are here. But if you come and you realize that the people who were before you have already been assisted, then we have to push you forward in the queue. We have to prioritize you because you were here before this was that idea. That's the second one. And then the issue of the queues also in Wynberg. What we are doing also is for the school project. We are going to all the schools to get, because every school holiday we always experience high volumes in our offices. So we go to those schools, we get a list of children without IDs. For example, in Khayelitsha we have about 2,734 children without IDs. And in Belleville, with the schools that have cooperated, we've got 1,239, for example. So we've already set two Saturdays for Khayelitsha and two Saturdays for Wynberg. In Khayelitsha, we are opening on the 21st of July and the 4th of August to assist those children. They must go to our offices because we are trying to cut the queues, because on school holidays, they are the ones who make our queues long. In Belleville, we are going there on the 28th of July and on the 11th of August. That's the other thing. So we've got school projects. During now, because the schools are open, we take 20 children per day. Like other offices like Belleville, they prefer to take them in the afternoon. Others, they will start with them in the morning. And we prioritize school-going children in the morning because we want them to go back to school. So we start with them so that they go back to school. And then the other thing in terms of dealing with the children, I wrote it down here. We had a meeting with the landlord. We've agreed that what the landlord is gonna do once we issue this card, people can go shopping. He's gonna install the screens all over the mall, so that wherever you are, you can see which number is called at Home Affairs, so that you can come close to that one. So we've agreed he's going to do it free of charge. We tried to convince him because he said we're gonna bring business to you. This is also what you can do for us. So he agreed to do that. And the other thing with the color stickers, we are going to stick the white stickers when the clients arrive in the morning. What we say in that card that we give them, it's because the time arrived. We always say to them, if you arrived here at 2 o'clock, please don't write 2 o'clock because we want to assess how much time you spend in our offices. So if you write 2 o'clock and the office opens, the official starts helping you at 8 o'clock, we will think you spend 6 hours in the office, which is going to be the true reflection of what happened. Better write 7:30 because that's the time we are paid from 7:30 in the morning. So we'll stick the white stickers. After each and every 2 hours, or one and a half hours still discussing, we'll change the color of the sticker. That's the way we're going to communicate as officials. Once you see a certain color of sticker to that official, to that client, that should tell you that this client has been here for this for so long. So you have to stop whatever you're doing and go and assist where you stick a lot of clients with a lot of stickers. That's the other thing that we have agreed upon. I'm not sure if there's anything else that I've left in terms of dealing with choice, but school project is part of the thing that we're going to do.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Amgard Michaels, and I'm responsible for the districts of Cape Winelands as well as West Coast. In addition to what my colleagues had said, perhaps just a few things to add. Both my colleagues has in detail gone into our strategy of war on queues. I think you would be all knowledgeable since at national level this has been quite a focus, and if you're an official of DHA, war on queues is your first priority. And that strategy, each province has developed a strategy, and there has been quite a number of things that has been coming on, has been put to the committee and to the members in terms of the detail of that strategy. But it also calls for this province to go and look holistically at what are the resources that we have and how can we improve in terms of addressing these huge queues and the dire impact that it has on our communities. So one of the aspects that we've also identified was we grouped our officers in terms of high influx officers. So we follow a robot structure in terms of red officers, which are our highest influxing officers, and my colleagues will assist me. Those are Paul, Somerset West, Cape Town, Bellville, Wynberg. What has been added in last week is that Mitchell's Plain came from orange to red in terms of that status. So all in all, I might not have, we are now at 7. There are a few officers that I didn't mention in terms of the red officers, but we're now in the province standing at 7 officers. So part of this strategy, what we've identified also is we want our office managers to take charge of the situation. A junior official cannot be sent out to the crowd to manage. The office manager must be at the forefront in championing this war on queues. So you would find at our offices, the first person that you should see is the office manager in entering our office. And then the channeling Ms. Ngaka has spoken to in terms of how we really try to, especially in the mornings with that collections that are splitting of our queue to get as many of our clients in and serviced at the office as soon as possible. This also entails looking at the management of the office to make sure that in terms of your leave management, for example, that during our high influx periods also, which are school holidays, that we do not have a magnitude of people on leave. Essentially, we want all of the desks manned as you come in. So you would see at our offices, if a desk, for example, is not manned, it might be that that PC is out of order. At the next level, also there's a monitoring and evaluation exercise being done in terms of our officers sticking to the strategy. Now, it's going to be a tedious exercise in going into all of the details of the strategy, so we've just highlighted some of them. But then in terms of monitoring that an office or officers under our domain is adhering to that, we as district managers are required to then do evaluations and unannounced visits. This goes up also to our national office where they also come and do unannounced visits. So there's different tiers in terms of adherence to this. I think it's every second week, Ms. Ngaka, the province also needs them to report what has been done in terms of the queues specifically in that regard. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. So on our unannounced visit, this is what we will find. Okay. All right. We'll keep you to that. Ms. Ngaka.
Let me go to the second one. The second one is about when are we going to roll out the ID smart card to other offices. The process is actually running at a very fast rate, because right now I think in Eden District and Central Karoo, it's only Lionsburg that is not modernized. Like I indicated, that Prince Albert is modernized. Lionsburg is also on the queue. But because this is a national project, and then a lot of prioritization has to take place, like for example, the reprioritization of Grabong as well as Stellenbosch from last year.
Chairperson, I was referring to Standard Bank.
Or Standard Bank, okay. No, all right. Referring to Standard Bank, it talks to the same thing, said. In the sense that when you look at how the modernization process was rolled out in terms of smart ID card, the same process was utilized in terms of rolling it out to the banks. I know for the fact that there was also a question in terms of why this was not rolled out in specific areas, because these areas are small and so on. I just want to say it is not like small areas, rural areas are not being considered. It's a matter of prioritization and the project managers that are involved at that office, and also depending on how they think that this project, if we start it off, it will work better at its piloting level if we start it here. Let me give you a typical example. When you look at...
Although it's not a red area, Standard Bank Canal, not a
read
area as indicated.
Yes, yes, yes. That is why I say it's a matter of prioritization. And let me just give a typical example of where we considered the rural area when we were piloting. This very same mobile solution was piloted in Lionsburg. You know, just to show that it is done at random, depending on, because if you look at the mobile solution actually speaks to the rural areas. Then it was pitched at rural areas. Now, when you look at the issue of the banks, you will see that the banks, there will be a certain clientele, segmented clientele, that will only go to the bank that have certain facilities. Because even within the same bank, we don't get everybody going to the bank. Some other people still prefer to go to our offices. Let me go to the next one. This one of number three, how do you deal with a 16-year-old parent undocumented? I think I'll give it to Mr. Dimande. Let me go to this one of offices. We said we have only one office that is not that does not have Department of Home Affairs facilities. Breda Falle, and I think it was indicated that Strand does not also have the office. I'll just get it from my colleagues, but maybe if we talk about the facility, we must also get it clear whether we talk about the facility in terms of the full office, or we talk about the because facility can come in different ways. Mobile unit might still be servicing the area, but we are just referring to this facility. But my apology for that oversight, but I request that our district manager also,
Ms. Nganka, before the district manager speaks, can I just give some direction?
Okay.
In terms of all the questions that you would answer, can you do that?
Yes, I'll
before
okay.
Your colleagues fill
okay.
in,
right.
Because I want to give an opportunity to RTFFA
okay.
Valley Development Project
okay.
and Child Welfare
okay.
to pose
okay.
the questions to you.
Okay.
And I'm just afraid that we are going to run out of time.
Okay.
Please,
okay.
thanks.
Okay, then let me answer mine. Then the other one that came out is... this one on how do we deal with foster care if there is a no court order. In most of the instances, Chair, when the child is presented to us, the child will be presented with will be accompanied by the social worker with these documents, and then we refer them to court to say the court must give the court order. The same way we can say it's very stringent, but it doesn't take time, because they just go to court because the case is already known in court. It's just to obtain that document for us to be within the legal framework of registering this child. So it's not as difficult as all that. We do get such cases, and then we say, can you just go, and the committee still, and such cases normally, we wait for them. We say, even if we have to leave here after 5, so that you obtain that paper, we wait for you because your case was already on our roll. It's not like we are going to say go and then we'll come next time when we come again. And then there is this other issue about how do you deal with the late registration of death, the people who do not register within the stipulated time frame of the Death Registration Act, which is 38. How do we punish those people? Initially, nothing was done to these people, but from 2015, there was this stringent measures that were introduced, the ones that I have just mentioned here, where in which the different categories are subjected to that interview, and then the committee and so on. Now, when this process started, there were also penalties attached to that. For example, when it comes to 1 to 7, it was I won't have the amounts exact, but it was about your 250 to 300 rand that is supposed to serve as a penalty for people who come as such. And then when it comes to 7 to 14, it was about 500 rand. That is why I say I don't have the figures correctly, because it was never implemented. The reason why it was never implemented, we had to wait for the determination by the treasurer, so which we are still waiting for up to now, before we can implement those penalties. I think the process started in 2015. The process of stringent measures to the level of this categorization of these different categories, it started in 2015, 2016, yeah. And then there was also a question of how do we deal with the issue of awareness. I believe that we are on the ground. We have stakeholder forums to which each and every district belong. They can come in different forms. In some of the instances, it will be they will be coming from municipalities with the chair as the mayor, and then we'll have our meetings, and then we'll also have our reporting, because our actual terms of reference is to discuss the activities related to that lines and our activities and the services that we, in those forums. Although we have some challenges in terms of meetings, because members are not always available, people are waiting and so on and so on, but some of the those stakeholders, they try their best, we discuss, and some of them we even go and report our performance to say our quarterly review or our yearly review, in this particular district we were not able to achieve our best registration. Can you help as a stakeholder forum to go deep into the community and then make them aware that as Home Affairs we want to register the babies? So it does take place. But besides that, it also takes place, our awareness also takes place in the form of our CDWs. We work with CDWs very closely in other districts who are able to assist us. For example, if you look at Eden District, we do work with our mobile unit, work with CDWs, but also we work with local government. We have quite a number of outreach programs as Home Affairs with provincial local government, whereby they even often assist us as per their program to pass in the lines to our offices in order for them to be assisted as such. But besides that, this clip that we are talking about, they are also there to assist us to make sure that our clients, the clip, because it talks to those the requirements And then there is somewhere where another question is about a debt. A person who is dead, who has passed away with no ID, and then he has to be issued with the death certificate. If we have challenges in terms of death registration, there is a process that we follow of handwritten death certificate, so that the deceased can be buried. And then in the meantime, the due process in terms of verifying what happened, what went wrong in terms of the actual the certificate in the National Population Register, but handwritten certificate is issued. And then there is this also, the other one where the parent is 65 years, and there are six daughters, and then only one daughter is receiving pension, and he doesn't have any information. We do come across such, but what is crucial here is the fact that we have interviews, like I indicated, and the interview will tell us exactly that this person, but is a gaming person, even if we don't have said. For example, if you come across a person who is 6 years, where do you expect that person to get the school certificate from? Because that school might long have closed down, might not even be there. Some of these cases are coming from the farms. That farm is no longer existing. So we listen to the word of mouth, we assess. There are certain leading questions that we ask, and the person definitely will make a recommendation to say, as a committee, we feel that this person is a genuine South African based on the questions that we have asked. Then we recommend it. And then where is the mobile? We have 11 mobiles. Okay, let me answer to this one of 11 mobiles that might not be conspicuous in almost every area. I talked about the modernization. When we talk to modernization, Chair, for example, let me take an area like George. In George and the surrounding areas within that radius, what we do, we don't issue ID, green barcoded IDs anymore, because the strategy of the government is to modernize. And the reason why we modernize came as a result of the fact that the government has seen it fit that the green barcoded IDs are now becoming risky. That is why there should be ID smart card. Now, in areas where we have that, we limit our mobile within reasonable distance, so that people are able to come to our offices. But if you look at areas like your Naisna, you look at areas like your Beaufort West, your Marysburg, the mobile is still functional. But also, bearing in mind that the mobile that we have now is actually being phased out. That is why we said that there is going to be a mobile solution, the modernized mobile solution from 2019. So as a result of which, this mobile, whilst it is being used, but we take note of the fact that it's going to be phased out, but where it is still necessary. For example, if you look at areas like Cape Metro, the mobile will not be as effective, because the places are within the close proximity of each other. So it becomes completely redundant. Yeah, I think I have answered that one. My colleagues will take the others, and I'll help as well. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Chair, perhaps just in addition, we do have the information on the mobile units for us to provide it to the committee hereafter. It has the specifics on it. There was a specific question on Marmot, but I lost track on which member asked it. The Malmesbury office has been closed in last year, end of last year, 2017, due to us being evicted, and we had a court order from the office. Now, at the time, the office manager was also the acting district manager operations, or DMO as we call it, and the acting DMO had engagements with stakeholders, but there were also two articles that were featured in both the Courant and the Swartland Gazette informing on the closure of the office. Now, at the moment, the office is functional in a very limited way, as we are functioning from the mobile truck at the cricket arena there. So we do not have modernized services within, rightfully so, the comment was made, within the office of Malmesbury or the town of Malmesbury. So clients now visit either the office of Atlantis or they come to Paul. So Paul, yeah, and also there would probably be an influx into the metro. But in terms of the use of the current staff of the Malmesbury office, they are also deployed to those three points. So there are some colleagues that are in the Malmesbury town at the truck. Then there are some officials commuting to Atlantis, as well as stationed at the Powell office for the interim. Can I just also, I know the question wasn't posed, but also just to say that in terms of the procurement of a new office, we have already visited sites, four possible sites, as tenders came in already, so that has been viewed. Of course, we're dependent on the Department of Public Works, and we are still awaiting progress from them in terms of the tender process, because they have received four tenders. Because we have also elevated this to our national department, so that they can see how they can just liaise at a national level to more speedily effect the procurement of that office, because it is a dire need and it leaves quite a vast void in terms of services in the whole of the West Coast. I think Mr. Ngaka has spoken to the footprint and accessibility question or comments that were made. I think we're noting that especially in our rural areas, our footprint does not match the need and the pressures that our communities are in terms of commuting to wherever our service is. So yes, indeed, our mobile services is the solution to this, but the debilitating factor at the moment is the fact that our current 11 mobile units are not equipped to do the modernized services. From our head office, we have received feedback that the modernized units would be available, I think, in Mr. Ngaka, the latest was last week in July, by July 2019. So at the moment, this is the only way that we see that we can service our communities. However, the current solution is there, but it provides for the legacy processes only. Thank you for your indulgence. Mr. Ngaka has spoken to the banks and just the limitation, because it seems that there's a exclusivity attached to the bank that is specific here to the Western Cape. Just to say that this is a MOU that is managed at national level, and it is not only standard bank that there are talks with. I am just not conversant in terms of who are the other banks, but there are definitely more than one bank. This is also information I think that we can provide to the committee, just also to note that the infrastructure required for our processes at the banks is procured by the banks. So that also plays a role in terms of where it is rolled out and implemented. Unfortunately, in our province, we only have the one, but I know in Gauteng there are many more, and we are in the infant stages in terms of this project, which is steered at a national level. The modernized office, there were such a lot of questions. I think I lost track at some stage, but the modernized offices, in the presentation it was highlighted that further two, which are Stellenbosch as well as Gauteng, were to be rolled out already in the previous financial year. So it is earmarked for this year, which we really have pleaded with our national department, and as recently as last week our provincial manager has communicated in terms of a request to adhere to the rollout, because we have everything in place. The things that needs to still be concluded is at national level. So it is at our acting on the table of our acting DDG, and we have also stated in the communication that we will elevate to the office of the DG with a specific time frame there too. I think the member had also just a comment in terms of the when will the mobile services be phased out. The current mobile services will be in place in terms of the legacy, and will be phased out as soon as we have the modernized version of it. There was a question in terms of the liaison with regards to other government departments. At office level, there are different tiers. So at office level, office managers would be liaising more on an operational level with their counterparts within other government institutions as and when needed. This applies to our civic section, but also to our immigration section, which are apportioned to officers. At a higher level, provincial level, our provincial manager also has different forums where he attends that also involves intergovernmental structures. I think members have heard the ways of communication. I think we've also noted your inputs in terms of how we can improve this way of communication in terms of all of your comments. Thank you, Chair. I think that's for now from us.
Thank you, Ms. Marshall. President Kanka.
There is this one in terms of collaborations. There is this one question about how do we work with early childhood development to try and register babies. We are working late registration now. We are working with SASA. I'll talk to it as if I'm talking to birth registration, because this is the engagement that we have been having in other areas. For example, last year we went out to do the presentations, even to SASA, and quite a number of other departments in other areas, where we were encouraging that people must come and apply for ID smart cards. But in the same breath, mention was made of either registration of birth. I don't see us having any challenge. We do work with them, even in the in our collaborations with in terms of our the outreach programs, we do meet there, we talk to them, and so on. So I think the one of ensuring that late registration of birth they can actually approach us. I know for the fact that in my email at the moment, SASA in George is waiting for me because we are supposed to have a meeting. We were not here the whole week, last week we were in the meetings, but I got it that SASA wants to meet with us. We have been meeting them, it will not be for the first time, so that we discuss this kind of issue. Yeah.
Thank you. Member Lester, if you indulge me, I'm going to give an opportunity to the NGOs pertaining to their challenges with registrations of birth certificates. So I'm going to start with Charles. Yeah, it was answered. You were out, yeah. Ms. Ngaka did answer that, yeah. So I'm going to give an opportunity to Child Welfare first, and then Asifiyefe, are you also posing questions? You, Asifiyefe? Okay, and then Valley Development.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to firstly say that if one listens to presentations like this, it almost sounds too good to be true. And I say it with all due respect, and I first want to say this is not an attack or anything on these colleagues. We just really, really need to work together. And what they delivered now to us is really not how it's working on the ground. But be it as it may, we are making progress. Firstly, I just want to say to them on their presentation, the first thing that I missed is the Constitution. We can have all these wonderful acts, but if we ignore what the Constitution say, we are in serious trouble, and this is how we experience it. The second comment I just want to make on the presentation, specifically, Madam Chair, is that 16 years and above may apply for South African identity document. We also don't speak here to the foreign children. Do they also, are they in the same category here? Are they also seen as individuals who can apply? On slide number 9, the first thing I want to say, we are talking here specifically to our most vulnerable group. And everything costs money, as all members quite rightly say. It costs them money to go to a home affair. It costs them money to take pictures. It costs them money to do whatever. Money that they don't have. Madam Chair, it costs Child Welfare 2,400 rand per application that we bring to home affairs. And we do it. We don't turn our backs on our clients because it's not about us, it's about the best interest of a child. It's a social worker's day out of office. It's a car, it's petrol, it's admin, it's food for the families that I don't have. It's money for them to take pictures. It's money for us to pay for them to apply to have the documents. It's money that the people do not have. We are not talking here about people who are in jobs, who can afford it, because they don't even receive a child support grant. Fathers are not indicating on the birth certificates, and I want to put it to Home Affairs, please assist us. Every child is born from a mother and a father. Why are we continue to only put the mother's name on the birth certificate? Because the moment that mother died, and they can live for years in a relationship, we are stuck because the name of the father is not on the birth certificate. And it's a simple exercise that we can do. We have to put the names of the fathers on the birth certificate. We are in a fortunate situation where we are really doing a lot of mediations, and we force them to go back to Home Affairs and to put the name of the father on the birth certificate. there's a lot of people, third generation people without birth certificates. It's a oma, it's a daughter, this is a kleindochter, and then we end here. No birth certificate. And that is a problem. Where do you start? And then with all the regulations that we must come by, it is just not feasible. And please let them just don't die. Then we are really in big trouble. And this is what we sit with. Age 1 to 7 year old, Madam Chair, these children are not in school. So they can't provide a school report. Nelly Kukum, who sit next to me, I invite all of you to come to my Eerste Rivier office. We are having 23 children between the ages of 6 and 12 without birth certificates who has never been in school. We do homeschooling for them. We can't register for partial care because of development. The first thing they request is ID document. That is your point of entry into the world. It's an ID document, a birth certificate. Last year we had 22. Out of the 22, we managed to place 17 in school without a birth certificate. I forced the Department of Education to take back two children who was again forced to leave school. They are back in school. We have, Madam Chair, 114 children in our small area there that we know of. We are too afraid to go out in the community without birth certificates. It will take my social workers, if we work on the program and the process that they set out for us, 6 months to get those people, children through the birth registration process. It's a social worker, it's money. There's children that is in need and care. We need to protect them. We must spend hours at Home Affairs. Paternity tests. Why must the paternity test not be older than 3 months? I really don't, and I'm not nasty, I really don't understand it. I mean, once a father, you're always a father, or not. I don't understand it. I can understand if it's a police clearance, yes. My paternity test, I don't understand why it must be older than 3 months. And again, if we work through the Children's Act, paternity test can be, if there's a means test done by the presiding officer, that the Department of Justice pays for it. Home Affairs, the parents must pay for it. Madam Chair, they don't even have food on the table. They don't have taxi fee. Where must I go to get a paternity test? National Health Laboratory Services. I think Home Affairs must just provide us all the services that they acknowledge, because we can use any laboratory who can do a paternity test, and it is half the price of the NHLS, the cost thereof. We are not allowed, Madam Chair, and here is my boss, according to our Social Services Council, we are not allowed to provide a Form 38 report to a court. That is in, it is against the law. We are not allowed to do it. I have begged Home Affairs, let us come together. Let us work together, put together a one pager, what you need, and we can provide it for you. A social worker doesn't have the time to go and write a report for every child that we must go and register for. It is really time consuming. I don't think we understand what we all went through, and I have the same problem. Even the regulations of the Department of Justice disallow court documents to be given out at lip. I'm not even allowed to give it to a lawyer. So I am not allowed to give it to any Home Affairs official. Madam Chair, we have just succeeded in the Blue Downs Court to get a court order whereby Home Affairs have been given 3 months' time to issue a bond child, and this is our test with a birth certificate. And it reads, in the event of non-compliance of this court order, the manager, Department of Home Affairs, Mr. Bongani Ndimandi, must appear before the Blue Downs Children's Court on 19 October and give reasons for the failure in terms of Section 46187 as to why this child has not assisted in getting it. Yesterday, we managed to register this child. Madam Chair, it's possible. I think we just need to work together. Thank you.
And if you can, and if I can limit you to, I'm looking at you, if you, please just pose your questions. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it possible, because they posed a lot of questions, because I'm afraid that some of the questions might fall into the cracks, that we deal with, I think it's about 9 questions that the lady has asked. Let's deal with them, so that we can pass on to the others. I think it's much safer, other than asking a lot of questions, then they fall into the cracks and we might miss the others while they're still fresh in the mind.
My rationale was that child welfare has posed questions, and the questions that RCFFA had, they will now scrap, and what Valley Development Project had, they will also scrap because child welfare has asked it. So that was my rationale to give it... to give them all a chance immediately after each other, if you indulge me. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My colleague Betty has a...
Speaker in the chamber.
Oh, sorry! Madam Chair, sorry, I'm totally new to this. My colleague Betty has addressed most of the concerns that we have. I just have 2 inquiries. The first one is, I know that it's mentioned on the presentation that it takes 180 days, you know, when it comes to a late birth registration, but our social workers have experienced that it takes longer. And at the end of the day, it is the child and the foster parent, you know, that suffers because they can't, you know, apply for a foster care grant without that birth certificate. And then the other inquiry I have is, I myself, when I worked as a social worker, I only recently became a regional manager, I also have experienced that if, for example, a client, if it's now an adult or whoever have passed away, and we are entering family reunification services, so we have to be able to offer the other organization rendering foster care supervision services with a copy of the death certificate of the parent. And then, for example, also when you have to reprint the birth certificate of a child where a parent maybe have lost the birth certificate, we need that birth certificate to attach a copy to the court report. We have experienced that Home Affairs have a rule that they do not provide the social worker, the investigating social worker, with that necessary documentation. They want the biological family member to be the applicant for that reprinted document. So it is a challenge because I also have experienced in last year when one of the parents to whom I rendered family reunification services passed away, and the only family member sit in the Eastern Cape. So I couldn't provide the foster care supervision organization with the necessary document, the death certificate, for the extension of the foster care placement. So those are the only 3 inquiries. Thank you.
I'm going to ask you to come sit nearer to a mic, please.
Hi, good morning.
Valley Development is also a child protection organization in mainly and only in Ocean View and Masipumalele. And I just want to say that we are dealing with children in need of care. And if you do not have a birth certificate, you are a child in need of care. You cannot access the grant and you cannot access school. And all of our cases, I think all three organizations, are children that fall through the cracks, that are on the outside of all the other organized, very modernization that you have. And we go to Khayelitsha from Ocean View every second week with various cases that we take. And some of them we manage to get birth certificates, of which we're very grateful, and it's huge excitement, or ID documents for children in foster care. But there are some of our cases, and these two, my colleagues here, are the ladies that go through to Home Affairs, that we have waited over a year. Children have missed out on school for a year or two. There's a child whose maternity certificate, the child was born in Pietermaritzburg. They need to verify the maternity certificate. I also don't understand why a maternity certificate can also expires after a month, and then you have to get a new maternity certificate. As far as I understand, a maternity certificate would be something that exists like a paternity certificate. So I'm just wondering if there's a way, and also we take a whole day, two staff members go with three or four clients every second week, and they are there for the entire day, also a cost to us. But I'm just wondering, can we not sit together with Home Affairs and the child protection organizations and actually just develop a system that we can all put together? Because I'm not going to go through case by case by case, because I actually could, but I'm not going to. But I think we need that when social workers maybe come to those Home Affairs, they could be assisted maybe a little sooner, that we do not have to spend the entire day, that the interviews can be not cancelled the day before or on the day when we get there. Sorry, the person who's supposed to do the interview is now not there. We really need to assist in these children. And the children who are from the Eastern Cape, who have been living here for 5 or 6 years, and we are told that they need to go back to the Eastern Cape to get a birth certificate. I mean, if those children are sent back, sorry, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what we have been told. We lose those children. If they are sent back, we lose those children. They never obtain a birth certificate. So really, those are the answers, but what I would like is a system. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I believe the gentleman in the green at the back there also wanted to... is it the gentleman or the lady? Gentleman at the back, you wanted to...
I also wanted to ask something similar.
Please get to a mic and then you ask.
Okay. I also wanted to ask something similar. I've also experienced challenges, and me and my colleague, this is our source. From social development, my name is Nkuzelo Vala. I'm a social worker, and I'm doing social relief program. Yes, we also had similar challenges, a lot of challenges, actually, with regard to Home Affairs and an issuing of a certificate. We also even did a program in Netreg area, whereby it was even difficult for a person to be buried because that person was never registered by the mother, and we had to run around to all the other offices, and it was very difficult. I didn't even know that a person could not be buried if a person was not registered by the mother, and it was not fault of the deceased that he was not registered. It was the mother was negligent, and the story is never ending. But what I wanted to ask is, I could also not go from case to case. I also have a case whereby the mother is available, but the mother doesn't want to register the child. You know, in such a case, I had as a court order, in such a case whereby it is obviously a case of negligence, whereby the mother is there, but the mother is not willing. I even went myself personally to the mother to try to, to get her to register the child, but she ran away. She doesn't want to register the child. In such a case, could you open a case of negligence? And if you open a case of negligence, you know, where does that take you? Does Home Affairs recognize maybe that court order? Or can the court issue an order whereby Home Affairs can recognize so that the mother can be compelled to register the child? Because the mother is there, but the mother is running away. She's registered the other children, but there was that one particular child she doesn't want to register. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Ngaka, I just want to ask,
your commitment, can you commit to having a meeting with the organizations as they have requested, Diana?
Chairperson, that's exactly where I wanted to come, to say we accept whatever challenges that they come across, and our doors are open so that we can, because we are there to assist. This is what we want to do. So, and we are colleagues. We must meet and see the easiest way. And we have district managers here. In case of complicated cases, cases must be escalated. You know, you don't just end at the office level. If you feel that I don't get joy, there are district managers, and in each and every office, you will see that there are contact numbers of the district manager. The district manager must be contacted for any urgent help.
Will the district managers be able to give a date and time and place of meeting here today to the organization?
I think they will. You say in terms of agreeing when to meet with them. Yes.
Please. The request was now from the organization that our request is for a meeting face to face and not a meeting that we schedule and then tomorrow it does not happen. So we want commitment now, that is their cry, commitment now to meet with Home Affairs. And I'm asking now from this committee side, can Home Affairs commit to a date, time and place to meet with the NGOs?
We are going to commit, Chair. But I must indicate at this stage our schedule is very tight. For this week and next week, I think from August, then we can, the 1st of August, then we can make an arrangement. Because we are busy with our TMDS, and then even this afternoon, one of the district managers has to go to Victoria. But I think next month, August, we can meet and try to thresh out matters of common interest and see how we are to each other. I also need to indicate I'm acting provincial manager. My acting will end on the 31st of July. Now, I'm actually based in George. Now, the acting provincial manager for August will be Ms. Michaels, and she's around here. Okay. Or is it Ms. Sakauli? Yeah, it will be Ms.
Sakauli. Luckily, they're both here.
Yeah, it's Ms. Sakauli. So they are around here, and then those days can be arranged, and whoever is maybe in Eden District can also arrange with me in Eden District, and then I'll meet them in George or in Beaufort West.
But all the NGOs that are here are attached to the Metro, right?
Yeah.
To Metro office. Mr. Jordan?
Honourable Chair, I would like to make a suggestion. As the Department of Social Development Western Cape is struggling tremendously with Home Affairs, and the one issue for me specifically, and it's been mentioned by Ms. Nevoet, is that with the orphans and abandoned children's registration, we cannot, in accordance with Section 305 of the Children's Act, release a report as required by Home Affairs to register the child. Our social workers are criminally charged if they do that. So that is for me the biggest thing that needs to take up, even on a national level, not even on a provincial level, but on a national level. Because these two acts are talking against each other on the requirements. The one thing I would like to suggest, Honourable Business, that I can contact Ms. Michaels or whoever as Social Development and schedule a meeting in August and invite the NGOs, because even Social Development's got our own questions that we would like to ask and be dealt with. So if I could do that,
Okay. I then would want to add, when you do that request, Ms. Ngaka, that is in order, Ms. Michaels and Ms. Sakawili, that's in order for Social Development to then request from your office a meeting date and time. And then please, when you do that request, copy in the committee as well, so that we are also in the loop of where you are.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Then I need to then say, in terms of what you have posed, it has been noted by Home Affairs, and that this is, will also become part of your thrashing out with social development with Home Affairs. Is that okay with you? Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, may I please?
I just want to say this is not about children of the Western Cape. This is about children of South Africa. We owe it to our children. So, and thank you to Mr. Jordan. I think that's the right way.
Thank you. I just want to ask, in terms of the West region, West Coast, the issue with the Basutus of Lesotho, the Citadel Dal Clan William issue, where are we with that issue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. With relation to the matter that you've raised, that would fall under our immigration section. And one of the means that we do in terms of the addressing of the matter is our in operationalizing it is that we have a plan that addresses the West Coast, the whole of the province, but particularly also the West Coast. I'm not at liberty to divulge the dates, but that would involve operations within the various towns where our immigration services go into that those towns, and they have the there's also obviously liaison with the other law entities, and the resources are very limited within the district itself, so we draw upon our other districts to just come and assist also.
Ms. Michaels, will I be able to get your contact details, because I want to talk further to this issue, because it's a real issue for us on the West Coast, but I don't want to take up the committee's time in terms of that, but I'd like to talk to you around it.
Certainly, ma'am.
Thank you very much. Members and stakeholders, we are going to break for tea right now, and it's, according to my watch, it's 10:40. I'm going to start promptly at 11, with or without you. 11, I'm starting. And then I just need to say that there's tea and coffee outside, and I think there's some juice, and there is catering. I just want to ask, and I'm asking this very respectfully, remember there's a person behind you. That's what I'm asking.
Would you mind, do you have a business card, or would you mind if I got your name and contact info?
I'm supposed to have a business card.
Perfect, thank you. I'm writing the report of the meeting. I just want to make sure that I represent everyone. Amazing, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
filling out? No, you're okay. I'm just writing a report of a meeting, and I'd like to be able to, you know, represent everyone.
Yeah. And then this new one, Clarence is a name, but I think they really get a fright when they saw this order, because she mentioned the name of Makama.
I'm with you. It's the first time in years we can get something right.
Well, if we could get this right, if we could, it would make such a difference to our functioning.
It would. Absolutely.
It's so many children.
Absolutely. And that's actually the issue, the children. I'm very thankful for the committee. Yeah, me too. Was, I was under the impression this morning it was all about SAFA stuff, because they've informed me. So I was coming in with a SAFA head, yeah. But they informed me, oh gosh, I'm a fan. Okay, now that is a good. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. what organization are you?
Oh, I'm from the PMG. So it's a parliamentary monitoring group. Actually, if I could get your contact info, do you have like a business card or?
Well, see, we don't even have.
Yeah, that's good.
I can write down for you.
Yeah, it's not mine. I'm writing a report of the meeting. I want to make sure everyone's represented well. That's my job. I'm a monitor. I attend meetings and I take presenters' information. And
that must be very interesting.
Yes, I have been in many, many interesting debates. This is actually my first provincial meeting. Usually I attend larger meetings in like parliament and It's cool. Getting to witness legislation.
It is 11 o'clock and we were here. Please can you close the door?
But also this is also consolidated into our weekly inspections, unannounced inspections that we conduct in our offices, where we also interact with that line, just to get the feel as to how is your experience in this office. So it is being dealt with.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nganka. And then Mr. Nganka has also confirmed that those questions that might not have been answered orally will be answered in written form to the committee. Okay? And then also, and I think it's quite a few reports that we have to get from Ms. Michaels in terms of that. Okay. Thank you very much. The next part of our presentation, we are now going to go over to Black Sash with an updated report of where we are in terms of all those issues and challenges mentioned in the last time that you were in front of the committee with SASSA. And it is in the SASSA window pertaining to those beneficiaries. Okay, over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity to brief the committee on where we are in terms of the unauthorized and unlawful deductions from the social grants and our beneficiaries. Our presentation layout, firstly, I would just like to give you a background of who is Black Sash, and then also what we have found pertaining to the social security fraudulent cases, and then how we address it, and then we will end at further recommendations. So the Black Sash, our mission is to realize socioeconomic rights with an emphasis on social security and social protection for the most vulnerable, particularly women and children, to reduce poverty and inequality. We believe that the implementation of socioeconomic rights demand open, transparent and accountable governance by state, corporate and civil society. We believe that social security and social assistance is not a favor that the state grant to beneficiaries. It is a constitutional right. As it states in Section 27(1)(c), everyone has the right to have access to social security, including if they are able to support themselves and their dependents, appropriate social assistance. So what we found, there was a lot of unauthorized airtime and electricity deductions on the social grant. We had a lot of complaints coming to the Black Sash. And we found that the majority of these deductions were from airtime and electricity from a company called Money and Mobile, which actually is a NetOne subsidiary. We went to a meeting the other day where SASSA provided stats and to just ask them to provide the steps. CPS, they made one change, the requirement to lodge a complaint for these deductions several times since 2012. And when dispute for airtime electricity deductions are lodged, the beneficiary's cell phone number is blocked. Many beneficiaries have not received refunds for these airtime and electricity deductions. They claim that CPS have not received affidavits, but it's unclear why, because the beneficiaries say we submitted those. We also find the CPS Net One refund policy arbitrary, and there needs to be a clear, transparent refund policy that beneficiaries can follow. This is the problem child where everything started. The EasyPay Everywhere bank account. The EPE bank account facilitates EFT debit order deductions for various Net One companies, including the Money and Mobile, Airtime and Electricity, the Moneyline loans, and Smart Life funeral policies. Nationally, we had a lot of cases. There was over 50,000 cases. But in the Western Cape, we took up the cases of over 1,000 beneficiaries in Ceres and the surrounded areas with Prince Alfred Anglet and Bella Vista. We found the following. Many were told that the EPE card was the new SASSA card, which was total misrepresentation. And many could not access the bank statements to assess what is going on in the EPE bank account. Many were struggling to close the EPE account with no success. And many could not stop the Smart Life funeral policy or the airtime and electricity deductions from the EPE account. Many could not stop the Smart Life funeral policy or the airtime and electricity deductions from the EPE account. There is no Grindrod Bank or Net One office in Ceres to seek recourse. Beneficiaries then have to travel to Worcester over 100 kilometers a return trip, and they have to pay the transport cost for their own pockets. We brought a documentary, Grind Grabs, which we'll hand out later, so that you can see really what the beneficiaries have to go through. In May and June 2018, CPS agents refused SAPO officials access to the SASSA pay points to conduct the SASSA SAPO card swap. SASSA lodged an interdict at the Constitutional Court against this behavior, and the Constitutional Court has decided to consider the matter. Because as much as we want beneficiaries to go over to the SASSA SAPO card, our CPS wants the people to stay on the EasyPay Everywhere bank account. At the recourse forum last week, there was a subgroup established to deal with the systematic and operational challenges just facing EPE card holders. Regulation 26A, funeral policy deductions. SASSA has started to implement a special system for permissible funeral policy deductions in terms of Regulation 26A. There's a cleanup project which will ensure compliance with the requirements of one funeral deduction that is not more than 10% of the value of the grant, because we saw that beneficiaries have 2 to 3 funeral deductions and they get very little cash value of the grant. Beneficiaries who want to make use of the Regulation 26A funeral policy deductions, they now need to complete a mandate form to instruct SASSA to effect this deduction. Funeral policy deductions are managed by CULIS and are made prior to the transfer of social grant funds to beneficiaries' bank accounts. SASSA staff to perform compliance checks on funeral insurance companies with the Financial Service Board. Before, beneficiaries could just enter into any agreement, but not anymore, with regards to the funeral policy. SASSA also checked the validity of the mandates and that the product offer is value for money and compliance with a one deduction of not more than 10% of the value of the grant is maintained. The May 2016 amendments to the Social Assistance Act regulations prohibit funeral deductions from children's and temporary grants. In addition to the criteria of one funeral policy of not more than 10% of the value of the grant, they are, even with the highlights and the victories that we've gained, there are still concerns about funeral policy deductions via debit order from beneficiaries with a SASSA Grindrod bank account and those with commercial bank accounts, including the Easy Pay everywhere. We fear that beneficiaries may end up again with more than one funeral policy deduction and more than 10% of the value of the grant. Funeral policy deductions continue to be made from children's and temporary grants. Many beneficiaries also end up with unauthorized and fraudulent funeral policy deductions, as illustrated in the example below. Beneficiaries who are promised food parcels by sales agents who allege they work for SASSA. Beneficiaries then provided their confidential data, including their ID, SASSA card numbers, etc. And this happened nationally, not just in the Western Cape, especially in KwaZulu-Natal. 2 months later, funeral deductions were made from the SASSA bank account. So they sign, hoping that they will get a food parcel, but then they see these deductions coming from the grant. Our beneficiaries are still waiting for the food parcels that they were promised. They have not seen a copy of the funeral policy, nor have they signed or authorized such a policy. In some instances, the funeral policies were activated with wrong information. When the beneficiary died, no one will benefit from the policy, yet contributions made for years. I just want to reflect on the example we have in the Western Cape. It's about a lady in the metro, I'm going to say the area. She was phoned, and the policy holder said that we know that your daughter is HIV positive and we want to offer you the real story, the real case. We're going to offer you a life policy for your daughter, and she took out the policy. She paid for 4 years, the daughter passed away. She could not access the policy because they told her, no, we changed from a life policy and is now accidental death policy. So unfortunately, we can't pay out. So Blacksus has taken up the matter, we took it to the Ombudsman, and it's now being escalated to the Financial Service Board. There are many such cases. That lady lost her house because she now had to pay for the funeral. Grant beneficiaries who take out loans on the EasyPay Everywhere bank account are often forced to take out the Smart Life funeral policy. What I mean by forced is they are coerced or it is misrepresented to them. And then an additional debit order is initiated for the funeral policy, further reducing the monthly grant. Funeral policy deduction disputes continue to take a long time to resolve due to the collection of evidence, securing bank statements to track deductions, completing affidavits for submission to SASSA. In our experience, submissions to the funeral service providers went missing several times. Submissions to SASSA were not passed on to the National Office for Resolution. Investigations found that some funeral insurance service providers are not properly registered with the FSP or fully compliant with the Act. And the problem is made complex by a lack of interface between the SASSA and CPS technology dispute system. We found that a beneficiary may end up with 2 reference numbers from the different system. They may lodge a complaint at CPS, then they still have to lodge the complaint at SASSA as well. The biggest reason that we find that the deductions occurred started from the protection of the beneficiary's confidential data. SASSA handed over grant beneficiaries' confidential data to CPS to pay social grants from 2012. The CPS Net1 collected grant beneficiaries' biometric, and the Department of Home Affairs will know exactly what that means. Through the fingerprints in the main information on their system. While the biometric data belongs to SASSA, they don't have the machines to read the data. That's why they have to hand it over to the new cash payment paymaster. So subsidiaries of Net1 then the Money Life and the Money Mobile gained access to beneficiaries' confidential data, which combined with debit order facility on the SASSA bank account helped to facilitate these deductions. The Constitutional Court in March 2017 and March 2018 ordered that SASSA and CPS must protect the confidential data of grant beneficiaries and put mechanisms in place supervised by the information regulator. In a recent SASSA and panel of expert report, CPS and Grindrod Bank argue that they want to retain access to the confidential data of grant beneficiaries, and we foresee a challenge going forward in terms of that. In recent SASSA, Grindrod Bank is advertising that the SASSA Grindrod Bank card will operate beyond December 2018. And they are advertising themselves now in the commercial bank space, luring the beneficiaries also to maintain the EPE card. SASSA has a challenge that we foresee when the CPS contract expires on 30 September 28 to protect these confidential data. So, we had a lot of complaints coming to us, and as Black Sash we couldn't stay quiet and do nothing. We addressed these unauthorized, fraudulent and unlawful deductions in a number of ways and through several platforms. We used community-based monitoring, local and national advocacy campaigns, engaging in legislative system change and media. We served on the ministerial task teams to investigate and explore solutions to the unauthorized, fraudulent and unlawful deductions, and from the SASSA Grindrod bank account held. As a last resort, when we see all else failed, we use the courts to ensure that grant beneficiaries' issues are addressed. Black Sash and community partners serve on the recourse forum as recommended by the panel of experts on 16 March. Other participants to this forum include SASSA, SAPO, CPS, Grindrod Bank, and DSD. We are happy that SASSA is busy phasing out the cash payment master, and they have a new payment system for social grants. The outcomes of our end of our grant campaign, social assistance Act regulations were changed in May 2018 to outlaw funeral deductions from children and temporary grant deductions from the new SASSA SAPO special disbursement account is a ring fence and will not allow EFT debit or stop orders. It will also not permit electricity or airtime or other advanced purchases. Some efforts have been made by SASSA, CPS and SAPO protect the confidential data of grant beneficiaries, but we feel more has to be done. We thought that things will be now better, but we still have recommendation. We still continue to fight. What we are recommending now and advocating for is the urgent establishment of the inspectorate to monitor and implement integrity checks and take up issues of fraud and corruption. We want SASSA and SAPO to sort out the technical glitches so that social grant beneficiaries have access to the full value of their grant on the date that they are supposed to get their grant. Ensure that the system is user-friendly and more is needed to educate beneficiaries on the benefits of this product. SASSA should not hurriedly close pay points, particularly in the rural areas where there is no national payment footprint, where there is no ATMs, and where post offices are few and far between. This is causing a lot of anxiety among beneficiaries. SASSA to ensure that the confidential data of grant recipients are fully protected in the SASSA SAPO and commercial bank account space, and also ensure that commercial bank accounts have proper recourse systems to service grant beneficiaries and then deal swiftly with unauthorized deduction. We want to caution SASSA just to dump the beneficiaries now again in the commercial bank space and then leave them unprotected there. that's the end of our presentation. And our contact number.
Thank you very much to Ms. Ishmael for that update. In the light of Sasa not being present. And I know what I said when we started. And it's no reflection on Black Sash, but all that is reflected is this report, the question posed to Sasa, and they not here. So I'm asking the question, is it worthwhile to ask the question? Member McKenzie and Member Gillian.
Yes, Chairperson, hi. Thanks for that input. And certainly after this discussion, as soon as officials leave, we have a decent in-depth discussion and to get Sasa here as soon as possible, using all means necessary granted to us. Yes, all means necessary. I mean, this is, you know, it makes you so angry when you read this, and thank you for Black Sash in your interventions and what you're doing to make sure that the people get appropriate assistance. When I look at some of these stuff, when a dispute is lost, they block your cell phone number. Now, first question is, they obviously work with cell phone companies to block your account. What information and what basis does a private company from CPS Net 1 give to MTN in order for them to block a cell phone number? I'm quite keen to know what the process is, because there has to be some legality around that. And I mean, many beneficiaries not receiving their refunds. I mean, there's so much to say, Chairperson, but I'm not going to say it here without Sasa present. But I mean, these guys, CPS, are behaving like thugs. I mean, they're a bunch of gangsters, basically. I mean, it's just unacceptable. It's just frustrating. I mean, anyway, I'm going to get very angry now if I go further. But yeah, they're just a bunch of gangsters.
I remember Member Mitchell, before you, Member Gillian, when he opened up his computer at the time when they did the briefing, and they denied that they have all this affiliates and, yeah. Member Gillian?
Chairperson, thank you, and I need to say thank you for Black Sash for playing that role in protecting our most vulnerable communities. Chairperson, I think I want to put a way forward here. The issue of what happened and what is still happening, what transpired, and all of that got a very big impact on our communities. And we can go back now and we can have a lot of discussions, but the people must answer the questions from here. So my way forward is as follows. And I think all of us as members are sitting with the same problem. My constituency office is bombarded by recipients of this grant that did not get it. I made contact with the provincial department of SASA, social development, whatever, to see what can we do to assist this community, because it's old people, it's people with children, my office is full. The answer I received last week is that we are trying our best, but we don't have a service provider. And that's why I'm looking at you, sir, because this has got something to do with the department that you are representing here. A service provider that the department did not appoint won't put food on the table of those people. In my constituency, what we did as councillors and myself is to cook soup on a daily basis and to give it to those people, but it can't assist them. It's not sustainable. And I think that the mess that the society is in is a government mess. And all of us must take responsibility for that. The question to this, my question in this committee is, what can we do? What can the Department of Social Development do in the Western Cape to assist us as members to make sure, while these people did not receive their grant, while there is a mess that is still being sorted out, people need food. And I think, Jefferson, that must be the highlight of our committee this morning. Because we can go and we can go to these issues of Grindrod. I'm very glad that Black Shares is now part of the ministerial committee and also the other monitoring committee, because it means there is somebody protecting society there. And I was watching the chairperson, the national chairperson of social development, on a public holiday when she called the committee in, and she called this different departments, whatever, into a standing committee, because it's not only a concern for us here, it's a national concern. And I think we must come up with a plan of action that will assist the community of the Western Cape. Forget now about the Grindrod and whatever, because nobody is here to answer us questions. Let's get a plan on the table, Chair.
Thank you. I just want to say at this point in time, in terms of SASSA being here today, SASSA has indicated to the committee via the coordinator that they will attend, and they even gave in names of officials who would have been here today. And then they did an about turn the following week. And they said that after consultation with the Minister of Social Development, it was advised that this request must be processed through the proper parliamentary processes and protocol. So SASSA would therefore appreciate if the same could be handled that way. Now, I'm still waiting for feedback as to what that proper processes are. Because the same process that was previously followed was followed. So we're still waiting on what that process is. I wrote a letter again to say, please indicate what the processes is that we need to follow. So, okay, so we are sitting here now today, and we are still waiting. And yes, I agree with Member Gillian, we need to plot a way forward, and we are going to have to do this after the department and Black Sash has left. Member Mitchell, are you raising your hand? I'm going to give you an opportunity, but I'm going to come back to Ms. Ntuli and Ishmael, so that we can talk around your presentation now. Member Mitchell?
Chair, I respect your view that we discussed it during our administration. But I think it's important that we on record, stipulate, because according to my understanding, if I'm wrong, then please advise, but this is sort of a follow-up to previous meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like a feedback kind of meeting, scheduled. So I want to, for the record, say that I'm disappointed that SAS is not here, because we will walk out here with our own views of the failures of SASA in that respect, and they didn't take up the opportunity to do the response. But Chair, I think we need to extend a courtesy to the National Minister. And get the minister, because I mean I'm sure she's as concerned as what we are with regards to this. So maybe if SASA doesn't want to come, that we extend an invitation to the minister. Thank you, Jen.
Yeah, if we go according to what is in the media, then I'm sure that she is. There is a change of minister or personality there, And I think that the minister that we currently have in that space is more warm towards what happens in communities. So yeah, I would also agree that we can invite the minister.
Chair, can we discuss that when we're in committee?
Sure, we can. I want to ask, however, and I'm going to pose it to you, in the light of where we are and the support that we have just received from Black Sash, what is the assistance or support that your department renders in terms of the the unfair treatment of beneficiaries? How do you then render support?
Madam Chair, before I answer that, can I just maybe just for sake of clarity, the member referred to people not getting social grants. I just wanted to be clear, is it people that has applied for grants that are now grant awaiting, or are we talking about the social relief of assistance?
It's recipients that did not receive the grants it's technically. So it means that there is a lot of people out there who did not receive a grant at the first. I phoned the, but it was at the provincial department. I think his name is Griffin or something. Mm-hmm. He's the head. And that
not
was
Henry de Grand.
Huh?
Not Henry de Grand.
No, I phoned the national department, Western. And the guy's name is Griffin. Mm-hmm. I had a long discussion with him last week. That was my answer. Because remember, the minister made an announcement that people did not receive the grant, there will be this relief, social relief. Yeah. So that was what I requested. The answer I received is they don't have a service provider.
You want to attempt?
I'll pass. No, let me not pass. Because you very clearly stated to us as the Department of Social Development that we have a responsibility to look at the interests of the most vulnerable. Can I ask that if you have a database of those clients, that it be made available to us, as we did with the Right to Know clients that was registered the last time, so that we can engage the regional executive manager, the acting one, Mr. Henry de Grand, and his team on this, as well as we've got a champion, a friend of the people, that is a director within SASA, Mrs. Beverly Gardner, and she's responsible for customer care.
Maybe I should also ask, in terms of those same category that did not get the money because of the migration now, and in terms of them getting the relief, will you be able to, or you have to now speak to SASA? Because I know the last time you said in the social relief program, SASA has got their own program and DSD has got their own program. So will it then be that you go back and speak to and give this list and then they have to respond to it? DSD won't respond to this.
Madam Chair, we will not only give the list to them, we will also do our random assessments, so that we look at the issue of there is what they call undue hardship and the issue of grant awaiting clients. Now, these are recipients that are active clients, and this is my interpretation, if by an act of SASA they are not getting the benefit, then there should be a remedial action coming from SASA. But we can also look at what we have, because we do have targeted feeding sites in specific areas, not all areas, but we can look at collectively in terms of how do we deal with the plight of the vulnerable.
Okay.
Member Gopi?
Chairperson? It's not only Gillian's office. I mean, all of us had PCO offices. Mm. And when people go to the pay point and they don't get their money, they come to our offices. So can this information be made available for all of us so that we can also tell our administrators and when people comes from the hall to our offices, they can call a number just to get an assistant or a parcel or whatever relief for those families.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you. Seems that you're going to be a bit of a mailbox to us now. So thank you. Yeah. We're just not going to give you a card. I want to ask then, Ms. Ismail and Tuli, in the light of what we have said, and members, I'm now, if you need to give me direction if I'm talking out of line here now, that we're not going to pose questions to you pertaining to your presentation now. We will now plot the way forward after you have left. And I'm sure that in the near future, you will get correspondence from us again. And I'm sure it's to invite you once more. I'm not going to give you, put you to through the strain of presenting again, but we'll hold on to this document because this is the, you know, this is a document that will inform the questions that we pose to SASSA when they eventually get here with you. So we are ending on a bit of an anticlimax. So I just want to discuss something quickly with Namonde before I give you direction as a meeting. Okay, just in terms of logistics, because we have now forcibly come to the end of you being with us in this committee meeting, and for today's meeting we have also provided a finger lunch for you, but this we have you know, it would only be ready by 12, so you are welcome to be around to enjoy that. Then I just need to ask members now, do we're going to do our administration now until about 12-ish, and then we can join you, of those of you who will still be around. Then it leaves me to say thank you very much for being here with us for this comprehensive report, Black Sash. And I reiterate what members have already said. Thank you for standing in the space of advocating on behalf of those who does not have a voice, who very often, you know, they get to SASSA offices, and I always have a challenge with this. And it seems that it is a, how do I say this? It's not a norm, because it's not everybody. But very often as public servants, you don't get all the information when pompies come to your office, if I can use this. You give little piecemeal information. We don't always understand that they come from far and they spend money and they spend their last money to get to a public office, and then they get this little piece of information. And then they have to come back the next day, or when they have money, to get the next piece of information. You know, that kind of thing. I must also say I didn't see it in your presentation, but I have been to two of these places. You know, this loan shops, if you want to call it that. They have offices, they have spaces, and they distinctly say on the window, on the door, they give loans to SASSA beneficiaries. I mean, really?
So thank you very much, and thank you very much for your comprehensive report that you have compiled and standing in for, you know, the vulnerable. And we just don't get too light at the end of the tunnel. It just takes too long for the light to come. But I trust that we will get there with organizations like you guys. I'm standing in that space. Then to the department, ons het nou nie veel vir julle gevra vandag nie. Julle het nou nie baie gepraat hier, meneer Jordan. Maar ons praat weer met julle. And then to the Department of Home Affairs once more, thank you. And then to our NGO partners who works with our vulnerable every day and be the parent and the guardian, to them, thank you for being with us. And then the social workers who stand in the front line of doing the service delivery, thank you. And thank you for being observers with us here today. So I'm going to say goodbye to all of you for now. We're going to do our administrative part, and then all those of you who stay behind, we will meet you again in the foyer. Thank you.
Yeah.